like to talk, but hey, I like to be clear on what the expectations are and let people be who they are. So I was never into changing people. I just wanted them to demonstrate perseverance, and we were going to work our butts off. That was always the foundation of the program for 43 years. You know, I used to send emails to my assistant at 4 a.m, and I'd want to know when people woke up. I knew when I was in the office, but you know, I wanted people to really be committed all the time.
This is the Leave It Better podcast, powered by the Side Out Foundation. Here's your host, Hall of Fame coach, Janice Kruger.
I want to thank everybody that's listening. And also, I'd like to welcome our guest, special guest, Russ Rose.
Janice, it's always a pleasure.
Love you, buddy.
You're back.
My feeling is, Russ, you're an icon, and you're known as the winningest women's volleyball coach of all time. You've spent more than 40 years at Penn State as their head coach. You won a record-setting 7 NCAA Division I championships, 17 Big Ten titles, and you were inducted into the American Volleyball Coaches Association Hall of Fame. On top of that, you're just somebody I really like.
And I feel very fortunate that I had a long period of time where my university supported the program and supported me, because I think the landscape in athletics has changed a great deal now, and the players have way more power than they should ever have. And so I'm okay with being on the outside looking in, and you know, I was never about looking back. So I'm fine, and I'm trying to help Katie, and I've got lots of other former players who are coaching, and I'm trying to help others from a distance.
We're going to hit you with one question here at the very beginning. What does it mean to you to leave something better?
I mean, we talk about that all the time as coaches with our players and teams, that's the bare minimum, that their responsibilities are to do that. And, you know, sometimes you're lucky and you come into a place where they're rolling and everything's great and you get to just fly on the coattails. And other times it's, hey, you got to get in there and get dirty and make it better. So, you know, that's what it means to me.
I usually tell people, Russ, that we went to grad school together back at Nebraska. We were just itty bitty young things thinking we could conquer the world. I was a colleague of yours, or colleagues, you know. Probably most importantly, the thing about you, Russ, you sent me a birthday card or birthday wishes every year that I've known you.
You're my girl. That's that. You know, that's that. I send a lot out. It's what it is. You know, I think, you know, like one of your questions, what do people not know? I'm happy they don't know. You know, you keep your friends close, and, you know, you don't need to make very many new ones. You know how loyalty is. And when you have it, you feel it and it's there. And, you know, for me, I would always tell people, hey, I've got lots of examples of people that really disappointed and let me down, but I don't hold a grudge because I don't have the energy to deal with it. You know, I walk slow because I'm not in a rush, not because I'm carrying all these burdens.
I did have that question, why you walk slow, but not, no, I'm just kidding.
I just got a new knee, though. I just got a new knee 5
weeks
ago.
Oh, God, congratulations.
Yep, I'll be tap dancing by in no time.
Russ, one of the things I wanted to ask you, and gosh, I you know, you've been around the world doing things with volleyball and helping, like, officiating NCAA committees, AVCA committees, and just connected to so many coaches in our field trying to help make the sport better.
The goal is to always be chasing it, you know, if you're really all in. And that's the thing about coaching. You'll have some players that are all in, and you'll have some players that are, you know, all in the conversation, but they're looking at their phone and their watch because they got other things to do. So for me, you know, what it looks like is when people totally commit to a cause, you know, and it's, you know, not everybody can win the national championship. And there's some teams that can, and there's some teams that, you know, they have to lay the foundation to get better. And, you may lay the foundation and not reap the benefits. It might happen in 10 years. So, you know, it's chasing something like that is a real group project.
Well, you clearly were on a mission to achieve greatness. Why?
Well, you know, I always said to the players, number one, I wanted to win.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that removed the whole thing. And yet every scouting report I ever did, I always said, have fun, play hard together. So to me, but on the other hand, I didn't want to put my time in if it wasn't for a cause.
And I know you're a stat guy, and I know Jim at George Williams College was a stat guy. So what was that like working with somebody that had the love for the game and also really dug into the power of statistics in some way?
Well, I mean, two things. You know, George Williams was a small school, had less than 1,000 students. I went to school there very late. I was working in a resort, and I liked the resort lifestyle. But my father thought college was a good option. So I ended up at George Williams, and it just so happened that Jim Coleman was there, and it was a big volleyball mecca. So I never really saw volleyball on any level. So I took like a volleyball one class from Jim, and then, you know, volleyball two. And he was like, hey, you're a good athlete. You ought to think of trying out for the team. And I mean, meanwhile, the team had really good players. So I wasn't in that position to do that. And I was like, well, Jim, you know, that's a good idea. But he was the physics professor, the chemistry professor, everything. I said, this chemistry's killing me, you know. And he goes, well, I can work with you on that. So the first 2 years I was on the golf team, just kind of rogue that, and then got into volleyball and was on the team my junior year with Jim as the coach. And then he retired and Jerry Angle became the coach. And in spite of having never played before, I was the captain of the team my senior year. And then I stayed and coached with Jerry a little bit. Statistics are just a reflection of how you did. They're not a reflection of who you are. They're not a true prediction in my mind of future success. It's a conversation piece. So I always took my own stats. So in my emeritus office I have on campus, I have all 43 stat books, and every year I rewrote practices every year, and people were like, hey, there's this new thing called a computer. I wanted to tell the player what they needed to do to help us win today.
So
I believed a lot in the statistics. I look at box scores, and it's the old saying, liars figure and figures lie. You can always make a case for why something happened, but you know, to me, you know, Jim was a great mentor, as was Jerry Angle and Terry Liskavich.
Through your career, through your life, really, anything that was considered by you as one of your greatest challenges or struggles or difficult times, if there's something that...
I think whenever anybody starts anew, you want to establish what's important to you. So there was always, you know, lots of struggles, but it was Penn State and we should be competing with the big boys. And so, you know, we would do that. We'd play and go play the Big Ten teams. And, you know, we had good success in the Northeast with limited funding, but it didn't really carry over to when you're playing the big dogs and you go to the tournaments and you're playing SC and UCLA. And you know, back then, maybe in the Midwest, Purdue, Southwest Missouri, Nebraska, Illinois State, those might have been the schools that were fully funded. But there's not as much sun in October, November, and December. And so, you know, those were things you had to, you know, you're the leader of the deal, man. You got to keep their spirit up. And, you know, so to change a culture, it just takes time. You know, it's, you know, everything. It was, you know, to me, it was always about attitude and, you know, the players towards each other. And, you know, I don't like to talk, but hey, I like to be clear on what the expectations are and let people be who they are. So I was never into changing people. I just wanted them to demonstrate perseverance, and we were going to work our butts off. That was always the foundation of the program for 43 years. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the players didn't want to work hard. And, you know, so I was like, hey, the players don't want to work hard. I'm not sure it's the right place for me.
Yeah,
because I've been working for Penn State for 43 years every day. You know, I used to send emails to my assistant once email came into play, you know, at 4 a.m. And I'd want to know when people woke up. I knew when I was in the office, but, you know, I wanted people to really be committed all the time. So, you know, for me, the struggles were, you know, just not being afraid to compete and, you know, tell the players. It was always the mantra was, hey, just control what you can control. We can't control the fact that, you know, Title IX came into play in some schools, Penn State in some ways, meant that women's basketball was going to get what men's basketball got. It didn't take into account the other 15 women's sports. It took into account that sport. So, you know, and when you're the person in charge, you know, it's easy to call, you know, cry and yell foul, but hey, that wasn't the answer. The answer was, hey, be the best we can be, and eventually we'll get recognized for what we accomplish. You know, whether it's coaching or leadership or parenting, it's all about, you know, communication. And, you know, I tell people all the time in coaching clinics, hey, I didn't treat all the players the same. I tried to treat them fairly.
Speaking of the communication with your players, and I have one specific communication I'm really interested in sharing, but when you would go into the locker room between games 2 and 3, what was going on with you and how you communicated with those kids to make the big changes or to keep them on track for the match?
Well, I mean, there's only X number of scenarios where you're going in, where you're either up 2-0 or 2-1 or down 0-2 or 0-1 or 1-1. So, you know, you have to preface that. A lot of times the players are happy because they're winning, even though, you know, as a great player and coach, that it's the race is a little longer than halftime.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, yeah, my wife was always the perfect balance. She was always half full. I was always 100% committed to half empty because my goal was always to make them better.
Yeah.
So even when we had that stretch where we were incredibly successful, every Monday I would come in with a list of things and I would walk around to each player and I'd go over, hey, these are the things you did good. These are the things we need to address this week. And that was it. So it was never just patting ourselves on the back. So as far as going into time, you know, I'm sure, you know, to the end of time, people always say, hey, what did you say in 2009 when you're down 2-0 to Texas and then you come back and win? That's the one you want to ask.
That's the one I love. Yes.
So I have to preface it by saying,
okay,
back then, the NCAA committee didn't. Now what they do is they don't start the clock between games until the interview is over. Back then, they started the clock as soon as the whistle blew. So I lost a little time being interviewed. I lost time walking off the court in this big facility, going down the hallway. So I might not have gotten there till like 4 minutes. We're already in, because I'm not running down the hallway with some great idea. We're, you know, down 0-2. But I said a few things, you know, that some people could go wash themselves off. And at that point in time, it was time to turn around and walk back to get in there and play. And I said, hey, we're going to change the matchups, but we're not changing the goal for the day. And, you know, we were fortunate. We won 15-13. I'm sure there were calls that, you know, that I'm sure there was game point touches that they didn't call. You know, that could have gone Texas's way, but, you know, whatever. It was, it wasn't so much a lot of times what you say. It's, you know, being calm all the time. I mean, I guess that would be more of the thing people would always say, man, you always look so calm. And I'd go, well, number one, it's because I am calm. And number two, I mean, I'm coaching 18 to 21 year old women. And in some cases, maybe they would respond to somebody yelling and screaming. But I was not a yeller and screamer. I never yelled in practice. So, but I mean, I know I said a lot of things to people that were frightening, but it was more one-on-one. And yet there were some players I knew I really shouldn't talk to at all. And I would hand them off to Salima or somebody who could, you know, talk to them with a smile and you know, and move on.
Hi there, Janice here. I want to take a minute to tell you about something very personal and important to me, my job. I'm the brand ambassador to the Side Out Foundation, and I've been a part of it since it began about 20 years ago. Believe it or not, I was recruited to join the Side Out team by the founder's father. He looked me up online and asked me out to lunch. That's when I got to learn more about his wife, Gloria. Gloria is the reason this Side Out Foundation exists. Her son and husband wanted to give her more time, and it worked. Gloria was this fiery redhead that was so full of energy and joy and happiness. They'd invite me and my partner over to Thanksgiving, and Gloria would dance around the house. She always made me feel so welcome. I joined the team at Side Out for the very same reason we get athletes involved with our Dig Pink program, because I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. I wanted to see Gloria have more time, and I was thinking about all my female friends I could potentially be helping. One of the goals of this podcast is to let people know that they can help us help people living with metastatic breast cancer see more tomorrows. How? By harnessing the passion and power of youth volleyball to raise money that will go toward real research and clinical trials that really do give families more time with their loved ones. That's one of my favorite things about this job, is that you can actually see the results of our research and how it helps give people more time. For more information, head to our website, side-out.org. Now back to the show. Now, I heard a little version of that that I'm going to hang on to. And I think I asked you way back when, and maybe you just gave me this great comment, and you were down 0-2. And when you finally walked that slow walk and you got to the locker room, you said, "Hey, I think this crowd came here to see Penn State volleyball. And I'm not sure that they're seeing that yet." And I can see, I can hear you saying that to them.
Yeah, sure.
And what powerful piece, because they worked so hard for you to get there, to do that, to become the best that they could be for you and the program and each other. And I just thought that was the most amazing thing I'd heard or anybody shared with me about a comment that was made between games 2 and 3.
That's true. And I mean, again, you had a lot of timeouts in between conversations, and, you know, and sometimes teams are so close that coaches screw it up by being mad and pointing out the bad part. And I know I was guilty of blowing some kids up. I used to say, "Hey, on my one shoulder, I knew what the right thing to do was," and muzzle myself. But on the other side, there were like two or three alums there saying, "Oh, go for it. You are who you are. And it's only going to make your life better if you're consistent." So there'd be times where I know I would say things that I shouldn't have said. But, you know, in that case, it was really, you know, hey, I mean, if you get to the Final Four, you're really good. And then so many factors contribute. And I mean, we had Megan Hodge and they had Destiny Hooker. And,
yes,
you know, either one of those players could win the match. And it was interesting because, you know, when you look at the last point of the match, it's like Megan hit a down ball and, you know, and it went 25 feet to middle back, and Destiny hit the down ball 30 feet, you know, to the left out of bounds. So, I mean, it's, you know, it comes down to, you know, it could go either way. So, yeah. You know, I mean, there were some times maybe we were down 0-2, and, but I also, I mean, I was always a student of the game. I always, when everybody was doing video, I was doing DVDs. So when I retired, I might have had 25 years of DVDs that filled 5 garbage cans because I threw them all away. But to me, because I wanted to see everything, I didn't just want to see Janice's attacks from the left side or from when she's running the one ball in the middle or, you know, when she had her glasses taped up. So for me, I wanted to see the interactions. I wanted to see timeouts. I wanted to see who do the coaches talk to, who, you know, I mean, so everything to me was giving me information that I thought was going to help me. Maybe it just kept me calm, but also maybe it made it impossible because I would spend a day and a half on every team we played. My assistants, sometimes they, you know, they give me their scouting report and you could tell they just went to Data Valley and wrote something down. And I was like, that's a shortcut. That's not going to help. It's not going to help me win. And for sure, it's not going to help you in your future. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want to know, you know, so for me, I wanted to see everything. You know, you can't tell people everything matters and then never be available. So the players knew I was in the office every day at 7:15 and didn't leave till the nighttime. So, you know, I wasn't spending any time working on my resume, applying for jobs.
Russ, I think about, you know, what I've learned from you and the things that I've admired about you over the years. And I feel like you're one of those people that bet on yourself and you took chances. You prepared to be the best at your craft or to go into any practice or competition. You had checked every box. You were genuine. I just always felt that you were so genuine. And you were kind. And I think you shared, and I don't, you know, you shared the love. You know, that's, I don't want that to sound too corny, but I felt and I saw that happen with you. And I think it's really important. And for sure, when I saw the interview or the tape viewing Katie, I saw it there so strong. And I love that she's the new coach following you in your program over all those years.
You're very kind to say all those things. And you know, I mean, again, you were a great player and coach, and you know, it's the bare minimum to love the kids. And it doesn't mean you like them, but there's some of them that need love because their family life was a mess. And even though some would say, hey, that's not your job, it's every coach's job to at least do a perusal of what's going on. There were some kids, man, I never had to worry about. They had such great parenting coming into their world, but there were some of them that, man, I was more a parent than I was a coach. Mm-hmm. So that was, but that's, again, if you do something for a long time, you're going to have a larger sample size and a lot more things that happen during your run. But, you know, I'm sure I would have done some things different in some cases during my 43 years. But on the same token, I got out because I had no interest in changing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would always tell people that everything matters. And not all experiences are good, but they're all valuable. And shit happens. And that's it. I mean, that covers the full spectrum of, you know, what we're doing with young people or we're doing with a bouncing ball. And you can only control so many variables. But, you know, I always wanted the players to know that, hey, life was tough. And I was going to make them tougher, whether they liked it or not. And yet there would be some kids that didn't come because they didn't want that. Clearly, they were like, oh, man. And especially now, I mean, God, you know, we went really hard. And I know some kids came to see it and they'd be like, whoa, I got another option down the road in the sun. I don't have to do any of those things right there. So I get it. So I don't quote a lot of people, but, you know, I read about 30 or 40 books a year and they're sports related. I don't know anything about politics, or I wouldn't be able to pass a civics exam. But I mean, hey, I just read about sports and coaches and athletes. And that was the world I lived in. And it was the world I liked to navigate in. And I would stay in my lane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have one more question for you. And the Side Out Foundation and Dig Pink, Penn State volleyball, and you back in 2008 began connecting and supporting the foundation. You are one of four schools that have done it for 15 years. And it's just, why? Why did you decide back then? You're the only Division I school that sits there. We have an NAIA school that is also there and two high schools that have been there every year. What was it about this that you connected with and felt a reason to support?
I mean, if we started in 2008, that was before my wife had breast cancer.
Okay.
So it obviously hit home more when my wife was laying on the couch bald and I was working and we didn't let anybody know. We never told the players. We didn't, you know that. So we, when it became something that was out there, we all have a responsibility to help people. So over the course of time, not only because it impacted my family and my wife, but I had two former players who their husbands died of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, that's certainly more rare, but and had a number of players that had breast cancer. And, you know, after, you know, we finally told the team, every year my wife would sit down with the team and talk to them about, hey, real management. You know, 18-year-old people feel they're invincible. And yet, you know, I had an opportunity to use some of the platform that I had at Penn State with boosters and benefactors. I raised a lot of money at Penn State. We have the second most endowments behind football at Penn State. And so when I would go to my luncheons and say, this Dig Pink thing matters and we need to do things, and I'm going to demonstrate it by writing the first check and things like that. And it's one thing now when, you know, coaches are making millions of dollars, but, you know, when you're making, you know, $25,000 and you're picking a cause, you know, it's a little different. So to me, it was, and still is, I mean, and you know so much more about it than I do. Hey, it's research matters, and we have to provide funding so that they can continue to look at things. So if you say to me, what's more important, NIL or raising money for cancer research, I'd look at you like, what are you talking about? Yeah, sure. I'm going to lose my job if we lose, but I'm not going to lose looking in the mirror by knowing what's really important and getting the players to know what's important and getting my boosters and benefactors to know that this is a really important thing. So I'm glad they still do it. You know, when I was doing it, it was great because every now and then somebody would come and just drop a check on my desk. And it was great, even though, you know, I didn't think Penn State at times took a big enough lead in it because, you know, a lot of big universities, if they don't come up with the idea, they don't want to support it.
Hi there. I want to take a minute to tell you about the Dig Pink program. You most likely know I've got some history as a head volleyball coach. Coaching for me was about providing opportunities for my players to grow and learn life lessons and to become the best volleyball players they could be. At the Side Out Foundation, we believe in using the power and influence of sport to build student athletes as people on and off the court. Players learn the value and importance of giving back to their community, working as a team, and taking initiative to get involved, all while directly helping people living with metastatic breast cancer and funding game-changing research. That is the Dig Pink journey. Dig Pink gives those wanting to do good a chance to be a part of something bigger than just volleyball. For more information, head to our website, side-out.org. All right, back to the show.
And our women's basketball over the course of time has come up with a, you know, with a nice program that they do as well on the fundraising front. So, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's like anything else. I never did anything for attention. I did it because I thought it was the right thing. And I was fortunate that I had good followership to support it. And I know Katie will continue to support it because it's a really important thing.
Mm-hmm. You said this a couple times through our conversation today is do the right thing. I think that's something that you did live by. You gave examples of that all the time. And it's been a true honor.
I love you. And I always wish you nothing but the best. And I'm the only living person that knows, other than your players, that Nebraska Omaha beat the University of Nebraska in a match that mattered, not in front of 93,000 people, but it was a reflection of you and your players believing in what people can do when they work together. And that's the world we really live in.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you for listening. Please share your feedback with us at www.side-out.org.